Hello and welcome to another episode of City on a Hill, a podcast about what it means to be a citizen of heaven and a citizen of the United States. We want to encourage Christians to find their tribe in the church and their hope in the kingdom of God, rather than to seek both in the kingdom of man. So with that, let's get to it today.
Well, hello, my name is Eric Estep.
And I'm Scott Reevely.
And this is another episode of the City on a Hill podcast. Welcome back.
Well, Eric, our last episode was about news. And I'm just wondering, have you read any news today?
Here's the intro, folks.
Because you said, I read news all the time and you give us big lists. Have you read any news today, Eric?
I have read some news today. And this will actually jump into our next topic. Let me pull it up. Can't even find it right now. I read this headline. I just thought this headline was interesting. Maybe we can riff on this for a little bit. This is an MSNBC opinion piece. The headline says, American Samoans are the latest victims of these ignorant Supreme Court rulings. And I don't know about you, but that even the headline wants me to think something specific.
Well, they want you to think that the Supreme Court is ignorant, among other things.
I'm sure there's other things, but at very least, they want me to think the Supreme Court, at least the rulings, are ignorant. And I can hardly think of nine people who I would consider to be less ignorant than the group of nine people that sit on the Supreme Court. And I don't care what side of issues you sit on, those are very not ignorant people. Those are very smart people that are thinking very long and hard about how to rule. And I, at very least, would not consider them ignorant.
Yeah, I think that's probably the wrong descriptor for the Supreme Court. I mean, because think about it. They all have high school degrees, wouldn't you think? I mean, seriously, maybe they even have college degrees.
Maybe.
Maybe they might even have more than that, huh?
They may have even taught college classes.
And they possibly have years and years of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so why do you suppose somebody would write a headline that says American Samoans are the victims of the ignorant Supreme Court? Why would somebody write a headline like that if, on the face of it, it's clearly incorrect? Mm-hmm. I mean, they might be other things, but they're not ignorant.
Right.
Why would somebody write that?
I think the purpose is they want you, and we talked about this last time, about opinions. This was an opinion piece. This wasn't a headline of a news article. It was an opinion article commentating on a news article. They want you to think a specific way. They want you to believe something specific about something that happened. And maybe not in this particular case, but in other cases, they probably want you to do something specific. They want to guide your actions, not just your thoughts, but actions toward a particular end. And this, I don't know, this is probably a mild example, but an example nonetheless of some type of catastrophizing, which I don't know about you. If you rummage through headlines quite a bit, there's a lot of catastrophizing.
What do you mean by catastrophizing? I don't normally have an ing on catastrophe.
You don't just throw that word around all the time?
No.
Let me, of course, I lost my file. Where'd it go? That's great. But in short, to make a catastrophe out of something, to describe something as worse than it actually is in order to guide thought. Well, if I catastrophize and describe something worse than it actually is, I can motivate your action and your thinking a lot faster. I can make that do a lot of legwork for me in my rhetoric, in my convincing you to do something.
So, what you're saying is basically it's salesman type things, because fear is much more of a motivator than even something positive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if you can get people afraid, and you know, we could say stop catastrophe. I can't even say it. We couldn't say it.
Have to say I love how much coffee we've drank, and it's just very obvious. We're just buzzing over here.
You can say catastrophizing. I have to just say they want to instill fear.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all short, you know, not very many syllables words. I can do those, right?
Yeah.
They want to create fear. as I listen, because fear is going to motivate me to action, or motivate me to donate, or motivate me to be on their side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And fear is, I think that is a big deal when you are a Christian and you are listening to news, and the expressed purpose of the news is to make you afraid.
Right.
That, because that is, in my estimation, an opposite way that a Christian ought to read news.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read news and be reminded, not maybe by the news article, but maybe just in my own meditation, God is on the throne.
Mm-hmm.
I know the King of the universe. I don't have to be afraid. Though the earth gives way, as the psalm says, the earth can give way. And you know what? I'm going to be okay. The one who
and
trusts
that's
in the
a
Lord.
Catastrophe.
That's a legitimate
catastrophe. That's a legitimate catastrophe.
Fair enough. And so I guess that's why I want to talk about it, is because the way that we consume news, the way that we, the way that people talk about the other side ends up being non-Christian simply because it induces fear. When Jesus came that we might have peace, he continually said to the disciples, don't be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's what I want to say to the disciples.
Mm.
Don't be afraid. Okay, here are some things. What we're going to talk about today are some things that you can do when you are reading news that will help you not be afraid.
That's such a good word. I want to tell the disciples, do not be afraid. That's fantastic. And at very least, I want people to pit good arguments against each other, not just engage in fear tactics so that, I mean, catastrophizing will demonize the other side, strawman them all day, and just use fear rather than, can we seek good? Can we seek the good, the beautiful, and the true, or whatever is honorable, whatever is just?
Ooh, Philippians 4:8 on your news feed.
Yes.
That, you know what? Let's just stop right there and govern your news by Philippians 4:8.
Mm.
Period. End of episode.
Well, if you want to come back next time, yeah, we'll keep going. But I do think that's a good.
That is, we hadn't even thought about that verse beforehand, but that is so good. Yeah.
Well, I have one example of catastrophizing. You mentioned demonizing the other side, and this is an old example, but a stark example, I will say, and particularly frustrating. It was written anonymously when it was initially published.
Okay.
But this is called the Flight 93 election. This is an article that was in the Claremont Review of Books. And I'm just going to read the first two paragraphs.
Okay.
2016 is the Flight 93 election. Charge the cockpit or you die. And this is referring to the events of 9/11 when they literally charged the cockpit to bring down a flight. He says, charge the cockpit or you may die. You may die anyway. You or the leader of your party may make it into the cockpit and not know how to fly or land the plane. There are no guarantees. Except one, if you don't try, death is certain. To compound the metaphor, a Hillary Clinton presidency is Russian roulette with a semi-auto. With Trump, at least you can spin the cylinder and take your chances.
Why does that frustrate you?
I'm fired up right now. Just trying to figure out how to talk. This isn't an argument about values or character or policy or anything. This is your fear level about how you vote in 2016 should be the same as if terrorists were in an airplane and you need to rush the cockpit to stop terrorists from doing something in your airplane. This isn't even in the realm of good rhetoric and how to engage someone well. This is irresponsible and catastrophizing, and creates a permission structure to do things you would not normally do. I don't know about you, but I don't normally walk up to the cockpit of an airplane while it's in flight. That's not a normal action.
Really? Let alone rush it?
Let alone rush it. Yeah. And this creates a permission structure to do things you would not normally do, mm-hmm. because, in other words, the world is falling apart.
It's so bad.
It's so bad.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's one thing. That's one good reason not to like this article.
Mm-hmm.
I think another reason is it preys upon one of the most tragic experiences in our lifetimes.
Mm.
by, you know, comparing an election to a terrorist attack. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, they're putting those on the same plane, and that is that was a tragedy.
Yeah.
And anyway,
even as I read it, I was remembering where I was that day.
Right.
And remembering what's going on. This is horrible. And attaching those past emotions to a current situation that do not belong together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, people should be frustrated when they are being, frankly, manipulated. In that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of this has happened too more recently with some of the science behind, or supposed science, or different scientific opinions.
Interpretations of data, or
whatever it is, about masks and vaccinations and all of these things. And we've had just some real challenges about that recently, even in church. I have an article here about, and I'm going to read some of it a little bit later, but forcing church segregation based on vax status by the Liberty Council. And that force church segregation based on vax status is not a true thing, number one. Mm. Nobody's forced church segregation.
But it told me that on Facebook, Scott.
Yes, it did. And you're sure to find just the right thing on Facebook. So, yeah, this is everywhere. And one of the things I think that Christians do especially, and this is part of the catastrophizing, one of the things that Christians do is that it's going to be a crisis for us, which means that the rest of the world is against us, and we get some sort of a martyr complex going about it, like all the institutions are against government and schools and everything's against Christianity. Now, I'm not going to say that they're doing what I hope they do, or that they're doing what the Bible says a man who pleases God ought to do. I'm not going to say any of that. I'm just going to say, let's talk about what they're doing rather than the fact that they're against the church. Let's not lead what they're against. Mm-hmm. Let's take what's happening, and is that something that we can deal with positively or not? And I think that's important, because what happens if you just zoom out and get a bigger picture, you see that when there's a lot of catastrophizing going on about how bad things are for Christians, or how much persecution we're going to face, even though we're not facing it yet, and you get all of that going, then what you're doing is you're really making it us against the world.
Mm-hmm.
When Jesus didn't say it's us against the world, he said go and reach the world.
Mm-hmm.
He said, as the Father sent me, so I'm sending you. You go, not you put up walls, and not you think that they're your enemy. And so I just want to really kind of jump on this catastrophizing idea, in part because it separates us from the very people we need to love and reach, and makes us feel much more fearful. Mm-hmm. See, the thing about that whole persecution, this is off topic too, but the whole persecution idea of this catastrophizing is, you know what? The church is in the hands of Jesus.
Mm.
It's his church. He's going to build it. And if he is king and I am his, you know what? Bring the catastrophes. It's going to be okay. And so I want to make sure that I don't quickly run to the things that would make me afraid, because I believe that Jesus is on the throne. So anyway,
so good.
That's sort of an application of, or an implication of, this catastrophizing problem that we have with news. Because some of the news we worry about hasn't happened.
Right.
It's what, if this happens, then all these other things are going to happen.
Or rather, if this happens, then this thing might happen, and then this thing might happen, then all these other things might happen. And there's so many steps in the catastrophe.
And the key is they might happen. I mean, it is not a sure thing. It is not happening now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, let's not catastrophize. So, anyway, Eric, if you're going to stop catastrophizing, if you're going to listen to the City on the Hill podcast, and you're going to say, you know what, those guys, that was really good. Well, I need to get off the bandwagon here. What are you going to do?
Great question. I think the first action you can take is just to be alert. The whole last episode was about news. How are you intaking news? We talked about business models and things like that, and keeping people engaged and using outreach, all those things. Just be alert. Be aware of what you're intaking. Be aware of what kind of language they're using. Passionate language is going to be a tell towards catastrophizing. If a good argument can be made without really intense adjectives or ever using the term Flight 93, it's probably the better way to go. But if they start using things that make your blood pressure go up, okay, they might be manipulating me. They mm-hmm. might be aiming me a direction, not with my intellect or my reason, but with my emotions. And if you're alert, you can potentially cut those things off and go, oh, I see what they're doing there. And maybe you still read the thing. I don't know what you're trying to gain, but if you are aware of a tactic of a particular article or way of presenting the news, that's going to make you a much more critical reader or watcher or listener, and that's going to help you not be manipulated.
Well, I think, you know, related to that, there's passionate language, but there's also, when you see a headline or even a lead paragraph that suggests the motive of someone, that let's just say it's the, you know, Senate Republicans want blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you have a group of people who it's a collective that isn't necessarily all wanting one thing, or they haven't all spoken to this reporter or whatever the case may be, you've got somebody attributing motive to people right. that they've not talked to. And so now you're not making a decision about the news. You're making a decision about the motive behind whatever mm-hmm. semblance of news there might be. Mm-hmm. So that would be another thing to be alert for: passionate language, attributing motives. I think that's one of the things that we used to see a lot more in the news was President Trump does blah, 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 or President Trump wants blah, blah, blah. And it was the way that people got, you know, clicks and people paying attention to news was to throw it up in a way that says, this is going to be, you know, this is his opinion and he's awful or whatever the case may have been. And those are all things to be alert for. I mean, just mm-hmm. be paying attention. In fact, I think it would be a worthwhile thing for people to watch news or to listen to news and have a little sheet of paper and take notes or play a little game. How many catastrophizing headlines or articles or paragraphs can you read, and what are the tactics? Because it's pretty stressful, and it hopefully be less stressful if you're reading that. I mean,
right.
I'm going to refer to one that I received that has, anyway, once I saw some of the stuff that they were doing, it was like, I can't take this seriously anymore.
Right. Right. Yeah. So be aware how you are being appealed to. I think that's helpful. And I don't want any of you to be manipulated by what you're reading or watching or listening to. And this isn't just politics. This is every type of situation. If you start paying attention, it will be obvious that people are trying to position your fear to get you to make a decision they want you to make. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's incriminating because I don't think I did it, but I was an HVAC service tech, and we had a product that we wanted to sell. It was an earthquake valve for a gas meter. So you would install this earthquake valve, and if the ground shook, the valve would shake, and then it would shut closed. And we were told, hey, you need to tell them about the Cascadia event. This 100-year, maybe it's probably bigger than that, several hundred-year massive earthquake that may happen in the next 50 years. And if that does happen, then this gas valve will shut off and you won't have gas going into your house. And I remember thinking, if that event occurs, they won't even have a house. It doesn't matter that the gas valve is turned off. Yeah. But the requested rhetoric they asked me to use was to place this large event and instill fear in someone who probably wasn't even thinking about a possible Cascadia event anyway, in order that they buy my product from me.
Hmm.
I'm glad to say I didn't sell very many earthquake valves. I was the guy maintaining the furnace, and then all of a sudden, hey, are you aware that you should be afraid of this thing? Yeah. Are you aware that this should keep you up at night?
So, I mean, fear is one way. So we're mostly talking about fear on this episode, but I mean, we get those things, right? The pest control people. I don't know if they like see our house swarming with ants or spiders or whatever, but we'll get a knock on the door twice a year from, we're in the neighborhood and your neighbor, and it's interesting, they will name one of my neighbors or sometimes two of my neighbors who have, purchased service from them or allegedly purchased service from them. And they know what they're doing and they're getting our service every month. We're going to take care of their bugs. And so if you're, you know, if you're one of the cool kids like them, and so they're this person I've ever seen selling a service I don't understand is trying to put pressure on me and manipulate me into something. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, there happens all kinds of things, and we'll get back to catastrophizing if we want, but we don't want you to be manipulated by salespeople or your children or anyway, we don't want anybody to manipulate.
This is a parenting podcast.
There you go. So we're all over the place today. What do you got next there?
Yeah. So don't be manipulated in any situation. Keep your eyes wide open. And I would also say, don't allow those who are catastrophizing to be your teachers or informers on a situation. And we referenced the article beforehand. Before I even start that article, I have been informed that the Supreme Court is making ignorant decisions. There's obviously a slant to that, a motivated reason to that. And if I'm only listening to catastrophizers, if that's where I'm getting my information about a situation, it's going to be colored in all sorts of ways that are probably not helpful and are more emotional than logical or reasonable or whatever. Grab your information from multiple sources, I would say.
So let me just admit what will keep you from getting fired up. How's that? That article about the ignorant Supreme Court, the first title, that's not the title that you first clicked on, actually. The first title you clicked on had something to do with American Samoans are the latest victims of last century's racism. And so that did two things. The original title, so changing titles, one would think would be problematic. But the other thing that does is that says, let's lump in this Supreme Court decision with the hottest topic we can so that people will click on it, racism. And then let's talk about who's the victim of that. And anyway, that just... that wasn't teaching or informing, it was manipulating, but nonetheless, what it in several different ways, it set the table for what they were going to say, and you need to be alert to it, I guess.
Right. So be aware who is, frankly, teaching you or discipling you, depending on how you give yourselves to them, and be aware, what is their position? What are they trying to get you to do? What's the action or the thing they want you to believe? And you may need to get additional information because they have a biased worldview about something. They want you to think a certain way. So just be aware. Don't allow them to be the teachers or the sole informers on a situation. I think another thing I would add is know the institutions. If we're talking about politics or government, know the frameworks of government that we're talking about. I remember this was actually 2000. Must have been beginning of 17. I remember talking with someone, several people actually, at different occasions, just very concerned. The political world had changed, new president, new Congress, things were different, and they were concerned about it. And I remember writing up just a basic three branches of government on a whiteboard. We actually had a chalkboard at the time. And I wrote it all up, and they looked at it and went, Oh, so this thing balances this thing, and this thing checks this thing, and this thing checks this institution checks this institution. oh, that it's not as easy to do things as I thought it was. And just that little bit of knowledge, a little bit of civics 101, it took away the emotion out of the situation, and someone could look at something and go, oh, okay, this is more complex than I have been told it is. And knowing the institutions, knowing the frameworks you're dealing with allows you to not be appealed to on the basis of emotion or fear, because you know how things work. You know, mm-hmm. there's more sprockets in that machine than you are telling me there are. Mm-hmm. There's more than one sprocket. If you want to, it was Senator Ben Sasse at a judicial confirmation hearing gave a little civics lesson. We can throw that in the show notes. But the same type of thing. People get really fired up about judicial stuff and go, they're going to change the laws of the land.
They're politically motivated.
They're politically motivated. And he just had a little lesson about, no, that's not how the system works. Legislators write laws, and judicial people don't write laws. And you're supposed mm-hmm. to have the legislature write laws, and the executive branch executes those laws. And it's more complex than we think it is. So I think that's super helpful. And we're not just talking about politics. We were just talking about this before we started this podcast. We were talking about house purchases, sales. And I was getting a little bit worked up because I don't know as much about that as I know about what we're talking about on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I was getting worked up because I didn't have all the information. And if I dig mm-hmm. in, and we talked about it for a little while, and I was gaining more information, and hey, my blood pressure went down and the mm-hmm. temperature went down because I'm understanding there are more sprockets in this. And if I can figure out how this works, I understand it better. And I don't have to be mm-hmm. motivated by fear yeah. or uncertainty or what do I do? So dig in. It might take a little bit yeah. more work, but man, that's such a better way to engage the world. Mm-hmm. Here's one other. I was talking to some other people about people that really care, and I really care about pro-life things, taking care of unborn babies, and with the switch in administration, there was a lot of concern about we have a president who is politically not pro-life. He would say he's personally pro-life, but he's not politically pro-life, and that fear is in a system of I don't understand how complex the system is. And I haven't heard anyone who is engaging more in the catastrophizing talking about the fact that probably the most powerful politician right now in the U.S. government is a pro-life Democrat. Let me say that again, folks. A pro-life Democrat, a senator from West Virginia named Joe Manchin. He has historically been pro-life and has been for a long time and has voted alongside other pro-life people when things come up. And he is the number 50 vote in the Senate. And if it doesn't get through Joe Manchin, it's not going to get through at all, because that's how our system works. And it was just announced that the president put together this budget. He's going to present it to Congress here. Work on this as your framework. And they took out the Hyde Amendment, which protects U.S. taxpayers from funding abortions with their tax dollars. And what did Joe Manchin do? Joe Manchin said, no, you're not going to get that past me. But I had not heard anything about that in the past 5-6 months when we were talking about how do we vote for president, da 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 da. No one ever brought up the fact that, no, there is a very powerful senator who makes the majority for the Senate, and he is pro-life and has historically been pro-life. And that should ease the temperatures.
And what you're saying is he's powerful, though, in part because of the way the machine works.
Right.
The way the machine right. works puts him right at the center where, you know, he can be a Democrat on some things and, mm-hmm. you know, be pro-life maybe on other things. Mm-hmm. And it's not all lost because of the way the machine works.
Right.
Yeah.
But if I don't even know that guy exists. Yeah. And frankly,
it's good to know, right?
Yeah, it's very good to know. And frankly, I was disappointed in people who were pressing for thinking a specific way about the last election, never bringing up the reality of this guy. Mm-hmm. We need to vote a specific way in a Senate race because we need the Senate to be this way. Are all the policies going to go the way you want them to go? Probably not. But in the thing you say you care most about, the linchpin in the system happens to agree with you. Mm-hmm. And that's something to keep in consideration.
And basically, part of the reason you're bringing this up, I think, is because the way that we heard about these Senate races was all catastrophized.
Right.
It was all going to be a catastrophe if Georgia went Democrat. It's going to be a catastrophe if all these other things happen, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's good to... that's good help. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I do think one of the things that, one of the other things that you can do is just kind of think about the news and and be aware of it. I think just think before you accept, I would say, you know, run the numbers. So I got, a news article sent to me about, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VARS, from the CDC. And it talked about how the log numbers were startling. And in just 1 week, the adverse reactions to COVID injections jumped from 192,954 to 227,805. I have no context for those numbers, number one. I don't know if that's a lot or a little bit. I don't know how many COVID injections were given. I don't know what I should be thinking about those numbers. But then it just continued. Deaths rose from 4057 to 5201, and it went on with hospital visits, with office visits, with urgent care, with severe allergic reactions and heart attacks and blood clots and Bell's palsy and miscarriages. And it was somewhat overwhelming, I'm just going to say. The next paragraph then said, it is estimated the above numbers are less than 1% of the actual. Actual could be at least 90 times higher. This was the thing that, this was the article that was sent to me. 90 times higher. And I was, I thought, that's pretty interesting. Let's think about those deaths from the COVID injection. 90 times 4,201. Is what that's, what's that even going to be? 360,000 deaths?
378,000, 90 deaths.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I just don't even know what to say when I'm starting to think of 370,000 deaths from the vaccine, not from COVID, but from the vaccine. Or, you know, you need to apply that to any of those numbers. If you push those numbers, it's, I mean, it's unthinkable that the case these numbers are trying to make, even though I have no context for them, that it's far, far, far worse than these numbers actually indicate, is, you know, just, it's just striking. It talks about the blood clots going from, first of all, the VARS is self-reported, so nobody says that these numbers are accurate. This article wouldn't suggest that they're accurate. Well, it suggests they're not accurate. But no defender of VARS would say that these are the actual numbers. But nonetheless, the numbers on blood clots from 939 to 1,065, are they 90 times off? Okay, if they're 90 times off, that's, you know, 90,000 blood clots from the vaccines. Okay, I'm just thinking about numbers of blood clots, right? Yale Medicine talked about the blood clots from that Johnson & Johnson vaccine that paused the vaccine for a while back in April. That was a thing.
They didn't administer it anymore for a long time.
Yeah, because there were blood clots. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're talking in these numbers that I was given, right? 1,065 times potentially times 90. Okay. The number of blood clots that shut the Johnson vaccine down was six. Six blood clots out of 6.8 million shots shut the vaccine down. Now, if you know someone with that got a blood clot from the Johnson vaccine, that, you know, you're going to perceive that differently. But all I'm saying is the actual number, according to Yale Medicine, was six. And the number of the on this thing, this news item that I was given was 1,000, but potentially 90,000. That's I mean, that's just a breathtaking jump to make me, you know, fearful about the vaccine and fearful about what was going on.
Well, and you're comparing the same call it industry or institutions, interacting with potentially two different vaccines. And if they are reacting one way to six cases of blood clots, clearly they would be reacting in a proportional manner to something that would be 9,000 or 90,000 blood clots.
You would think,
and
right.
You're comparing like to like, really, and saying that something must be, I am being appealed to in a specific way by this article because it doesn't match this thing over
here. Yeah, I can't figure out how these numbers would actually be real.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing on the numbers there, I'm just going to say, is there's a footnote. It says it is asterisk. Estimated the above numbers are less than 1% of actual. There's an asterisk, and I couldn't figure out what the asterisk was. Well, I did see the asterisk was for a footnote. The footnote says this: Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Inc. published 2011 electronic support for public health vaccine adverse event reporting system. It was published in 2011. So the citation that made me worry, that made me fear that it's actually 90 times worse than these 1,000 blood clots, when they shut it down for six,
mm-hmm.
the citation was actually from 2011. And that was, you know, that's, again, I just am speechless about that.
It's a decade ago.
Yeah. And so, and we hadn't thought about a pandemic really then. So all that to say, it's just the numbers are important, and I think you just have to give some careful thought to it rather than just accept it, however, yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing that was going to really help with catastrophizing is ask the question, is this how someone who favors this policy would characterize it? Because if I don't favor it, I'm going to characterize it in a bad light, and it's going to be a catastrophe if this goes through.
Or at least I'm tempted to do so. I may not do that.
Well, because you're a good man. Yeah. I, on the other hand, would totally catastrophize it, okay? But, for instance, this same article that I received that had all the VARS numbers in it I just mentioned led with this. The Washington State governor wants to segregate worshipers based on COVID shot status. That's the lead sentence. Now, what I mentioned earlier about, you know, attributing motive or attributing desire, this does that. The Washington State governor, the only reason, okay, for whatever we're going to talk about in this article is that the governor wants to segregate worshipers. You know, and then it goes on to say, you know, Washington Governor Jay Inslee just released his new dictates for churches. Okay, well, it does happen to, I am in that business. And the reality is that everything that governed governed churches was the distance, and you know, you gotta keep physical distance. And if churches somehow couldn't get all the people in because they had to keep distant, they were permitting churches, not dictating, not, you know, wanting to segregate. They were permitting churches to create a vaccinated section so they could cram people in there and keep the other distance. Now, I don't know of any church that did that, and I don't think it was a good idea. So I'm not in favor of this, even as I criticize it, okay? I'm not in favor of the opposite. But the reality is that I don't think the governor wanted to segregate worshipers. In fact, I talked to somebody in Washington, and they said, I don't think the person who wrote that had ever been in a church. You know, and that's probably the case. It works great for basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
It would work really well for some other events, but that person's probably never been in church and got lumped in with churches, got lumped in with other large gatherings there when they were first making changes on the vaccines. So anyway, if what you're reading in a headline or in a lead paragraph or anything is not what someone who favors the policy or issue would, how, if it's not how they would characterize it, you're probably not getting an accurate and, dare I say, truthful story. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to think about that. I mean, we all know this, right? I mean, that's what a straw man is. Let's, in order to win, let's put up a straw man and we'll knock him down because he's, you know, easy to knock down, a straw man.
Mm-hmm. Those are fallacies, folks. Fallacies. Yes.
And so what if you, you know, what if you put up a little tougher man mm-hmm. and try to see what a steel man might do so that you had a legitimate opponent? That might be helpful. So,
and I love that term, steel man the arguments, or go for a steel man argument. I hope as Christians, if we are talking with a neighbor who maybe disagrees with us and we present their argument to them, the ideal would be them saying, wow, you presented that to me better than I could present it myself. And then you can disagree. Yeah. From there, you can go, well, I disagree with this and this and this. If you're starting from a straw man position and you're disagreeing with a caricature of what they think, one, you're not loving your neighbor, mm-hmm. and you're starting so far back, and you're going to have so much ground to make up to appeal to them or to convince them of something you want them to believe if you start that way. But if you start with a steel man, you're buying favor with them.
Well,
building friendship with them.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, I mean, love your neighbor as yourself. I don't know if you've ever been on the receiving end of a straw man accusation, like somebody, have you? Somebody puts up your position and you know that's not your position. They claim it's your position. I mean, that's super frustrating because what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no talking, there's no winning, there's no useful conversation there. It's ridiculous. So anyway, and I suppose as we're talking about practical things, Eric, we probably need to come back to this again, is just don't watch the news. Just don't get your news from Facebook.
Just turn it off, folks.
And, you know, figure out other ways to find out what you need to know. But, you know, you don't need it to be spun for you ahead of time. And so, I mean, that's like a last resort. These other things are some suggestions about how you might, prior to turning it all the way off, get the most out of it.
Right.
But anyway.
And I hope it's obvious, listeners, that we just did a full podcast about how to engage news. So it's not a, please put your head in the sand and ignore the world around you. It's engage this well. Engage this as ambassadors. I think we used that term before. You need to know this place well if you're going to minister to it well, if you're going to go into the world and make disciples well. So you can engage this well, but don't just allow yourself to be fed by people catastrophizing and striving to manipulate your emotions towards their ends.
And making you fearful so that you forget that King Jesus is on the throne.
Mm.
Yeah, so I mean, I want to come back there.
Yes.
So that we get, you know, because that's why we're doing this, is because I really do think that Jesus would say to you, do not be afraid.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's not the voice we get when we read our news.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's a great last word. So we'll leave it there. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and rate us, whether you like us, whether you don't like us. If you leave a review, it'll help other people see us. So we'd love to, whatever review you want to send.
Well, wait, Eric, I'm going to interrupt you here. You just gave them a real positive reason to rate us. Is there not a catastrophe way that you could say that? Where you could say that, like, if you don't rate us,
the gremlins are going to take your cereal.
Something like that, yes. It could even be worse than that, folks.
It could be worse. You won't believe what might happen to you if you don't send a review. Please send a review. I don't have any catastrophe reasons to do that. I would just appreciate it. And I would be grateful. And it would go a long way for other people to see what we're doing. If this is helpful, share it with a friend. That is probably the best way to share it. Is just, hey, friend, love you, care about you. This has been helpful. Check it out. If you have questions, send them to podcast@newlifenw.com, and we look forward to the next conversation.